This show furnished by Rowan, Gerby, and Wynn. It's time for Gerby's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gerby. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gerby, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gerby and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. And everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I can't hear myself because my headphones aren't working.
You got to turn them up.
They're up as far as they can go. Can we get some new equipment here? I want to change them right now.
I bet you're in the wrong. I bet you have your actual.
I can hear
plugged
you.
Plugged into the wrong the thing. Hold on. I'm looking to.
Wait, no. Mine are plugged in, but the connection isn't working.
I'm going to get. Okay, I'm looking. You keep talking.
What am I saying? I'm Alan Gerby. I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gerby, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. Kerry just fixed my headphones. Jose's here to help. Tyru is not Tyru, but she's looking like she's going to help. Debbie's out getting Keith Fink, and I'm a happy camper. Thank you, Jose. Thank you, Kerry. Kerry Kasem is here with me.
I am.
She is the wonderful co-host. Keith Fink has entered the building after being lost. He's here. We're so happy to have him here. Kerry, how have you been? I've been on vacation for the last 3 weeks. I was up at Lake Muskoka in Canada, outside Toronto, and my neighbor was our former guest, Cindy Crawford. That was fun. What were you doing? Were you hanging out on the lake?
I was working.
Honestly,
if there's one person that needs a vacation, it's you. So I'm glad you took it.
Yeah, but with two little toddlers,
still.
Hudson and Harper, that was not a vacation.
You needed it, though. You needed to get away from Los Angeles. And your cough is better.
My cough is better.
Yeah.
I can hear myself think and speak.
Good.
It was an amazing experience. I loved it. We were with all our family, and the kids had a great time. And speaking of family, you had a victory for your family as
well.
I did,
yeah. After two years of Gene Thompson Kasem and Liberty Kasem stalling everything in the wrongful death suit, you know, for abusing and then killing my father, Casey Kasem,
Wait a second. Killing your father? You just said she...
No. What she did, her actions...
Harry.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Practice free speech. Say what you want. Who cares what anyone says?
Because we're winning. And the fact is that all her actions led to his death. And when a TV show says that, you know that that was vetted by 50 lawyers.
It doesn't matter. A TV show.
Well, I said it before. It was a real channel.
Who knows what a TV show has done with research and law? It's the court of laws that makes the decision.
Hey, I'll just say this now. Sue me.
You don't care, do you?
No, because I'll win. So here's the thing.
Sounds like Keith Fink.
Yeah, maybe. But I know I'll win. We've won everything else. I was told time and time again I'd never win this. I'd never win that. This is impossible. I've won everything. Everybody told me I wouldn't win. And I changed the laws in this country. I'm going to win this. And it's going to be a victory, not just for me, but for everybody who goes through isolation and this type of elder abuse.
Right.
So it's going to happen. So
and Glenn Campbell died while I was gone.
I know. And, you know, I've been working with his kids.
I know you have.
Yeah. We don't want to talk about that because Lisa Bloom sent me a cease and desist, so I can't.
By the way, Lisa Bloom sent you a cease and desist, former debate partner with Keith Fink.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of hers at all, you know. So that's why I'm not. I'm absent.
She was on the show 3 weeks ago. We just finished our powerful women. Last week we had Patty Glaser. The week before we had Laura Wasser. And the week before that we had Lisa Bloom.
Okay, I was really bummed I missed Laura Wasser. Really bummed.
That was amazing.
She's amazing. She's a huge attorney. I mean, I have to say
she's very small, though.
She's a beautiful woman. She's a beautiful woman.
It's overeasy.com is her new website for divorcing people. I just gave the divorce site out to a good friend of mine yesterday. If you can't afford Laura Wasser, you have to go to itsovereasy.com. But there was stuff that happened while I was gone. In Canada, we don't see anything. I was at the cottage. I had no TV. It was amazing not to have TV. But I heard something happen in Charlottesville. Not sure what it was.
Okay.
Well, it's not funny.
You can't look at me and say that.
No, I did not hear about it until I got back to,
really? To the
United
Canada?
States of America. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I heard that a lot of people were fired, or not a lot, but at least four or five.
Four.
Regarding being identified at the rally for the alt-right. And we need to talk about this employment issue. Before we bring Keith Fink, and I've name-dropped him, and Keith Fink, if you don't know, is a professor, and he is a very well-respected and loved professor at UCLA, and he was terminated. He's an adjunct professor. He has a practice, so don't feel bad for him. He still has a very good legal practice, Keith A. Fink Associates, so he still has a job. But it's his claim that he was let go for political reasons, for things that he said in his free speech class. Of all things.
Mm.
In his free speech class, he said that the UCLA administration found that his political perspective was the basis for his firing. And we're going to talk to Keith shortly. But before we do, we want to talk to Lotta Knott. Lotta Knott is the executive director of Newseum Institute's First Amendment Center. And we want to talk to Lotta about what happened this week with some of these neo-Nazis or right-wing fanatics who were terminated from their jobs because they were identified in the rally in Charlottesville. Lotta, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Now, you have a lot of experience in this area, and, of course, you've been a litigator in New York City, but now you're the executive director of Newseum Institute for First Amendment Rights, and we want to talk about your perspective of whether or not private or public employers have the right to terminate someone based on their political beliefs.
Well, it really depends on whether you're a private employer or a public employer, because private employers can basically fire their employees for any reason, really. They can fire you because they don't like your hair or because they have your political beliefs or any reason that they can think of. Now, with public employers, it becomes a little bit more tricky because the First Amendment is meant to protect us from the government punishing our speech and censoring our speech. And when the government is your employer and you're speaking on a matter of public significance and it's not part of your job, it's something that you're doing independently, and in that case, then you might have a First Amendment claim if you're fired for that.
But the federal employment law bans discrimination based on race, religion, sex, national origin, age, disability, and other kinds of labor union-related activity. It doesn't ban political affiliation. So if someone has a certain belief, regardless of what it is, what law would they would an employer base it on to just terminate him? For instance, Terrence Highwater was fired from his job at Mojo Burrito. Sounds like a private company to me in Chattanooga, Tennessee, because they said that they weren't supportive of his activities last weekend. Ryan Roy was fired from his job at Uno Pizzeria and Grill in South Burlington. Sounds, again, like a private company. So there are a number of others as well. The Croft gentleman was also fired from Limehouse and Sons. So is it true, then, that if these people would have had public jobs, maybe working for the government, they would not had a basis to be fired?
Maybe, maybe not. Because
Lotta, you're killing me here. You got to give a definitive answer.
Oh, you know how it is. If you're a lawyer, the answer is always who's paying me, right? But you can definitely argue both sides of it. But with government employees, it's really interesting, at least to me because I'm a lawyer, in that if a government employee is fired for their speech, the first question that that a court is going to ask is, was that speech a part of their job? So if you're if you're, say, a press secretary and you're fired for something that you said while you were doing a press conference, like, that you can't claim First Amendment protection for that, because speech is what you do. And that was what you were, and that was what you were doing, and you were fired basically for doing a job that your employer disapproved of. But, okay, if your speech isn't part of your job, the next question that we got to ask is, were you talking about a matter of public importance? So, if you know, you can be fired for gossiping about your boss and stuff like that, because that's not usually considered a matter of public importance. But if you were speaking on an important public matter, then you're going to go to the next question, which is, all right, okay, but does your interest in speaking on this matter, does that outweigh the government's interest in, like, having a well-run agency, having their employees get along and be able to do their job? To give you an example of public employees who have been fired for their private speech on important on publicly important issues, there have been cases where police officers have been fired for posting racist things on Facebook on their own time at home, with the idea, the justification behind that being that, well, these officers police racially diverse communities, and the fact that they've maybe their racist views on Facebook jeopardizes the ability of this police department to police the community.
So that's in the interests of what they do, the business, privately, of course, if it affects customers. But there have been some state laws. Eugene Volokh at UCLA wrote an interesting piece this week, and Eugene's been on our show a number of times, and he pointed out that the businesses will try and weigh their interests versus, and there's been some states that have actually passed laws that would ban firing based on what you're talking about. And how do you weigh that versus the business interests affecting customers, for instance, or affecting the ability to profit?
Right. I mean, that's why, like, it's interesting that states are passing laws that way, because I think it's a tough thing to measure business interests versus somebody's interest in speaking. It's a little bit easier to say, like, well, this government agency is just not going to be able to fulfill its function if you have an employee doing this. It's a little harder. I mean, you know, with some of the people who were fired for being present at the Charlottesville rallies, I think a business could argue that like, having someone who's a known white supremacist might drive away customers. And so it's kind of – I think that's the reason why private employers usually just have a lot of discretion about who they hire and fire, because it's tough to say what is a legitimate business interest and what isn't, you know?
Was President Trump right when he talked about both sides? You're a First Amendment center. You obviously focus on freedom of speech. So wasn't he right when he said there was problems on both sides here?
You mean at the Charlottesville rally?
Correct.
Well, assembly is protected. I think the issue with this particular assembly is, how quickly it got violent and the deaths that occurred. From the accounts that I know of, the only person who was killed at the rally was killed by someone who was there for the Unite the Right faction. So I think the both sides argument, I don't know. I think that is stretching it quite a bit.
Carrie, you think it's stretching it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm listening to this, and I was, you know, an employer, and I had people that, you know, whether you like them or not, if they did a great job, great. But if they were a white supremacist, or if they were somebody that, not necessarily the political views, but somebody that really had views that were completely against mine, they'd be gone. Completely gone. And I'm listening to this going, I'm not going to have somebody working for me like that. And there shouldn't be any laws that make an employer hire somebody if they are in completely, in going in different directions morally, ethically, not necessarily politically.
So I have to think the way you do?
No, but you,
Lotta?
If I'm employing you and you're a white supremacist or whatever it may be, you are immoral in my eyes or unethical in my eyes, I don't want you there. And if you're, that's my feeling. So if there are laws being passed, that would be, you know, and this is, I'm not talking about, you know, religion. I'm not talking about race. I'm not talking about anything like that. But somebody that's involved in a hate group, I don't want working for me.
And there is something odd about having private employers, like, not letting them fire and hire who they want to. You know, there's no, Yeah, it's weird to force somebody to work with someone and pay them and, you know, like basically be in a close association with someone when you're a private employer. So, yeah.
But if we have a fear of being terminated from our job because we can't say what we want to say or we can't believe in what we want to believe, isn't that really stifling free speech?
Well, I understand your points, and I think that's something that people worry about, that, like, okay, First Amendment issues don't really apply to private employers. It's really about keeping the government out of speech. But I know that people do worry that if people are punished for their speech, eventually people will self-censor themselves, and I get that. But at the same time, I think that there is an issue of, like, maybe you don't want to associate with this person, and I don't think it's right for anyone to force you to basically keep someone on if you find their beliefs are contrary to your own, if you find their beliefs hurt your business.
What if you're a professor at a large institution and you say things in your lectures that the administration doesn't like? Should the administration be able to terminate your services?
Wow, now this is a great, great legal question, because first of all, if they're a private university, like I said, private universities, private employers, they can pretty much do whatever they like. Title VII notwithstanding, they can do what they like. But if it's a public university, you know how I told you that with a public employer, with government employers, the first question you ask if, like, you get fired for your speech is, was that speech part of your job? Well, technically, like, if you're a professor at a public university, you know, you could say, like, well, you're in class, you're speaking, that was totally part of your job. But a few different circuits have argued that that shouldn't apply to professors, because academic freedom is, you know, it's a very well-respected and powerful thing. It's something that the Supreme Court has upheld before, because professors, you know, they're a little different than your average government employee. They're supposed to kind of push boundaries with their speech. They are thought leaders. And so some have argued, and some circuit courts have ruled, that there should be a different standard for professors.
And maybe if you're teaching free speech, maybe that would even be a stronger argument. We're going to find out after the break, because we're going to speak to Keith Fink, who is and was a professor at UCLA, who's filed a grievance against UCLA for terminating his services based on what he claims to be his political perspective and what he has said in his lecture. I want to thank Lotta Knott, from the executive director from Newseum Institute First Amendment Center, for being with us. Thanks, Lotta.
Thanks for having me.
All right, stay tuned to Gurvey's Law. We'll be right back with Keith Fink.
Hey, it's Peter Tilden, and I want to tell you about Flooring Pros. Their selection and prices are definitely going to floor you, because they've got beautiful natural hardwoods, laminates, vinyl, and tile, and they can beat the price of the big national advertiser who you see advertised every day by as much as 50%. And they get it done right because they have an enormous selection and everything is in stock. That means you can get a free estimate one day and installation the very next day. So check out FlooringPro.com. They're on Google. They're on that beautiful website, Houzz, and check out their Yelp reviews. They're fantastic. So for the largest selection and the finest hardwoods, environmentally friendly flooring, laminates, exceptionally trained experts, and the best price guaranteed, call the number one flooring company in Los Angeles, FlooringPro.com, at 800-815-1565. That's 800-815-1565. Call them for a free estimate or go to FlooringPro.com.
Flooring Pro, their prices will go.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, PhD, host of Healthline. Tune in to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Our product line, Quantum Nutrition Labs, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works.
Are you searching for a full-spectrum botanical formula made from premier quality garlic extract? You've found it in Quantum Nutrition Labs' Quantum Garlic Complex. and it's on special. It features bear garlic and boasts high concentrated amounts of the unique nutrient allicin to deliver you exquisitely thorough immune and cardiovascular support. For a limited time, buy two bottles of Quantum Garlic Complex and get the third one free. Call 800-370-3447. That's 800-370-3447. Or visit online at qnlabs.com.
The next generation of appliances at the Home Depot now has something even newer. Extra savings, up to 25%. Take the GE Diamond Gray Front Load Steam Washer and Steam Electric Dryer with a time saver feature for a deeper clean and a shorter cycle. Just $5.98 each. Over $800 off the pair. Talk about cleaning up. Nobody beats our prices, guaranteed. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. U.S. only while supplies last. Gas Dryer Extra. See store for details. Valid through August 23rd.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Hey, about what you're trying to do to me. Hey, hey, hey,
let
the
man go, let yourself be free. Yeah. Let's go back, let's go. We are back right here at KBC.com. If you want to call us, it's 800-222-5222. 800-222-5222. We are talking about employers' rights to fire employees based on perhaps political speech, perhaps their perspective of white supremacists, neo-Nazis, or any other type of what I might consider creepy behavior.
It is creepy behavior. I think it's an understatement.
Did you watch the Vice piece? Oh,
I didn't. I heard about
it,
though.
How can you not watch the Vice piece?
I didn't watch it, but I've heard about it. You were in Canada. You didn't even know about this, please.
Yeah, but I still, when they start marching against Jews, I like to hear about it.
I heard about it. I wanted to know
if I can come back to this country. Hopefully they're in the minority. There was only a few hundred, but I guess a lot of people have said that that's a few hundred too many. But, again, then there's the issue of whether or not the media has just blown it out of proportion. Because I don't have a lot of friends who have supported that rally. How about you?
No. You know, ratings. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in. It's, you know, it's death. It's hatred. It's the death report. I stopped watching the news a long time ago. I get my news from, I think, better sources than the TV news. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of it is actually the media blowing it up.
You know, I think we need to bring this into the real world and talk to someone who actually was terminated from his position as an adjunct professor at UCLA, one of the finer institutions. And he is a graduate of UCLA, so we don't want to slash him. And at his law firm, he has employed a number of UCLA grads, some of his students. So definitely he has supported UCLA, but apparently he found some reason in his lectures to not necessarily condone all of the actions of the administration. And his name is Keith Fink. He's of Keith A. Fink Associates, and he has handled a number of high-profile cases over the years. Typically, he has been on the underdog side. He's gone up against Ellen DeGeneres and John Rotten and Babyface, American Apparel, Marilyn Manson, ESPN, Kobe Bryant, some other big, big companies and corporations and individuals, and he's done very well prevailing on a number of these high-profile cases. For the last 10 years, he's been a professor, an adjunct professor over at UCLA, and then recently, after what they call, quote, an excellence review, end quote, his job was terminated. He's filed a grievance with the union over his dismissal, and he's here with us today on Gervie's Law. Welcome to Gervie's Law, Keith Fink.
Thank you, Alan, for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Now, that was a really wimpy response to me. You have been known at UCLA as probably the greatest debater of all time. It was Thomas Henkel Miller, one of the lecturers there, that says in the history of UCLA debating, here he is, the number one. And with Lisa Bloom, they won just about everything they could have back in 1984.
Yes.
That's it.
See, that's how a debater gets it. I got to tell you, when I was debating at the University of Manitoba, there was a Rhodes Scholar named Tom Patterson, who is an attorney here in Century City, and I was a freshman. I went to the debate lunch meeting that we had, and I was so into it. Tom Patterson, Rhodes Scholar, the number one guy, and after the session, I went up to him. I got all the guts I could. I went up to Tom Patterson, the little freshman, and I gave him my argument out in the hall.
Well,
I gotta tell the story. He looked at me and walked away. Didn't say a word to me. I was crushed. The master debater.
And a cunning linguist.
Wouldn't even respond.
I'm a little nervous being here today because I grew up listening to Top 40 Countdown. And I've never met your father.
Well, here,
so,
nice to meet you.
I was excited, of course, Alan, to meet you, but to meet an offspring of somebody I grew up listening to every weekend. So I'm fired up to be here. And sitting in the last segment, I thoroughly enjoyed that. It's all the material I go over in my class. And your show is obviously a wonderful show to have people like Lisa Bloom, who's just an amazing mind and person. And she fights zealously for her clients. So you're very lucky to have guests like that.
But Gloria Allred is amazing. Her mom,
not everyone,
incredible.
Right. And Gloria Allred, who's been on the show a number of times, Erwin Chemerinsky. But on our show many times, but not all of these folks are of the same political persuasion, because
right.
We try to balance it out. We had Professor McConnell from Stanford, who's as right-wing as they come, and of course, John, what's the guy from Chapman? Why am
I? Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about. I'm blanking, too.
Debbie?
Well, this is why I'm fighting so hard relative to my situation at UCLA. So when I was a young person, Lisa was my college debate partner. And back then, people would say I was to the right and she was to the left. And it was wonderful having somebody like Lisa with differing ideas that were reasoned, that were well thought even at that young age, to push me, to test me, to probe me. And I was able to crystallize my own views. And, you know, at 18 and 19, I didn't have much experience and much thought. And you know, your views really are nuanced. You know, nobody really is for or against the death penalty. Even I'm for the death penalty. Am I for the death penalty for someone whose IQ is less than 70, for someone who is 11 years old? So I believe in college, it is the marketplace of ideas. You want to have intellectual pluralism, and you want Lisa Blooms, you want liberals, you want conservatives, both as students and as teachers.
That's true, and that makes the point very well. And it begs the question, though, were you relieved of your duties because you said things against the administration in some of your lectures, which you have admitted, and not necessarily trying to trash them, but just trying to teach? Or was it because of your conservative political views?
I was let go for several reasons. I would say first is because in my classes, I empower students with knowledge of what their rights are. And UCLA does not want students to know what their rights are. It's very easy to trample on a student's First Amendment rights when they put up a poster linking MSA and SJP to Hamas. Because students don't know the full extent of their rights on a university campus to free speech. And when Dean Kang sends out one of his interim emails trying to equate that with the case law that says those types of posters incite violence, he's absolutely wrong. And when Dean Kang puts in those types of emails that the university will use all of its lawful resources to go after those who post those types of messages, it's very chilling for students. So I empower students in knowledge of what their rights are, but not only in the issue of free speech. What I think angers them more, and if you look at the review by Professor Bryant, is my criticism of UC in general and UCLA specifically as it relates to Title IX.
Vice Chair Greg Bryant said, as he went to one of your lectures, he said, this is the first instance of many throughout the class where he seemed to be using his lecturer role as a means to espouse his personal legal views. I felt like this aspect reduced his credibility, even when I agree with his specific legal points, which in this lecture overall was often. The course is political in nature, but I could imagine his treatment of the issues being much more balanced, which I believe would greatly enhance his teaching effectiveness.
I do not tell students what to think. My role is to make students think. And students get at UCLA pretty much one side of the equation. So, look, I can know walking in to a class that almost all the kids believe that minimum wage laws are good and that we should have a higher living wage. I don't even have to present the position why minimum wage should be $12 or $15.
So, but is that your job? Is it your job to espouse a political view, whether it's $15 or $10?
I don't espouse any views. I present both sides in my classes. My point here to you is students have already, minimum wage example, they've already been told and drilled by those on the left, the progressives at UCLA, that there are no arguments against having a living wage. I don't have to spend much time articulating reasons why one would support a minimum wage.
When I went to school at Brown, and it was a liberal institution, I didn't seem to notice how much politics affected the lecturing. Hasn't that changed over the years? And that was some years ago. But why is it now that the politics of a professor is such an integral part of the university's presentation of education?
Well, I mean, the radical, the progressives have taken over the universities.
Yeah.
You really believe that?
Absolutely. So let me, I was finishing my point here. I empower students in the knowledge. It's not so much the free speech aspect. In UCLA, it's time and time again where it's the Kanye Western costume party, it's the Asians in the library video, it's the posters on campus. It's the issue with Title IX that I believe upsets them most. And I'm critical on almost all fronts of UCLA's policies and the way they handle investigations, both as it relates to victims of sexual assault and sexual abuse, and to those who are accused. So the Greg Bryant letter, for example, it was timely. My class goes over, it's called Race, Sex, and Politics, Free Speech on Campus. And the second and third week, I go over sexual assault, sexual harassment on college campuses. I go over affirmative consent laws. And so my discussion of an email that Dean King put out right before my class fits seamlessly into the material I had already taught the students. And so in discussing that, I was critical. My own personal view was critical, but I wasn't trying to push that on the students. This had to do with mandatory reporting. So let me explain to you what mandatory reporting is. Many students trust me. They bond with me. They trust me. For example, they view me as a confidant. This can be females or males. So put yourself now in the shoes of an 18-year-old young lady that is a victim of sexual assault. They don't have too many confidence in their life. Maybe their parents, and maybe they don't want to talk to their parents about sexual assault. And they may become attending UCLA from out of state. So they would like to speak to me in a confidential capacity. They trust me. They respect me. They know that I know about the nuances of sexual assault. Under the mandatory reporting requirement, a teacher must then report this instance, this incident to Title IX. I mean, I think this vitiates a very important thing that we want. We want these students to get comfort, to get proper guidance.
Is it your job, though, to criticize the UCLA officers, the Title IX officers?
I have every right to do that. Absolutely. Okay. Every right to do that and fire probably the preeminent organization for First Amendment and free speech in this country. Analyzed my case. They take cases for both students and faculty when they think that First Amendment rights have been abridged. And their analysis is crystal clear here, because when you look at the reason, if there was any teacher that's excellent at UCLA, it's me. Okay,
and that's not really saying much.
Because the criteria they use, you're going to get me fired up now.
Get you fired up, let's talk about FIRE. First, really quick question. Did they respond by August 8th? Did FIRE ask UCLA to respond to their letter by August 18th? Did they respond?
Okay, so I'll reveal this. UCLA's done a double take. Tom Tamberg, who is the crisis management person at UCLA, who used to be the apologist for the Archdiocese and child abuse cases, immediately responded to fire and said, UCLA is not going to respond. Fink was given a basic due process, his generic response, and we don't discuss personnel matters, even though they discussed my personal medical matter with the Chronicle of Higher Education. Privacy rights don't apply to me because I'm not a student, so FERPA doesn't apply, and I waive all my privacy rights. 2 days ago, they did an about-face. The UC office of the president said to FIRE, please give us time.
Really?
Yes. Well, you know, so because FIRE was going to respond back. I mean, FIRE is no wallflower.
Yeah.
And then please give us time. Please give us time. We are going to respond. This is somebody in the UC, an attorney.
So you are expecting a response. Well, at least FIRE is.
Please. Well, they can't say much in their response. If you look at Dean, the reason why Dean Gomez let me go. Did you read the reasons?
Yeah.
There are no reasons.
Well, Gomez didn't give reasons, but Bryant says at one point he quipped how he was surprised that the current class got approved in the first place and repeatedly attacked UCLA as not supportive of free speech rights. He goes on to say, I believe Mr. Fink clearly has a right to express these views, especially in a class on that topic of free speech. But as a teaching technique, I feel the more he belabors his points about UCLA in particular, the more he undermines his credibility and objectivity as an instructor. Isn't it true, Keith, that he really is focusing on you criticizing UCLA, the administration, Title IX officers, etc., versus what you're saying, which is your political perspective or your focus on free speech?
Or are they using that to say, to get you out of there because they are really upset about your political affiliation? Well, is that what's happening?
Yes, that's FIRE's position. The biggest mistake UCLA made was actually the Bryant letter. So FIRE jumped all over the Bryant letter because the Bryant letter is proof in the pudding that the actual reason, if you believe Bryant, that they got rid of me and they didn't like the way I was teaching of my class is because of my in-class speech where I criticize the administration on various policy issues.
But
let me just tell you this, as it's funny, you're talking about who is a better teacher, Brian or myself. You must get teachers and teach students engaged and interested. And what better way to do that at UCLA? If I was teaching at Brown, I would use examples at Brown or Yale.
I have 30 comments from your students saying you're an amazing and wonderful teacher.
Yeah, I was about to ask that.
Before I say this, I want to say this is very important. I'm an employer, as are you. I have a law firm. You have a law firm. If one of your associates goes around at court and says that Gervie is a total a-hole, he's a jerk, he yells and screams at everyone, which may be true, but the fact of the matter is I can't have that person working for me.
Well, okay, now you're getting, but that's nuanced, Alan. That's true. In that context, you can let that person go. However, if that person was engaging in concerted activity on Facebook relative to Gerby's perhaps unfair pay issues, you might have issues with the NLRB. I was listening to your segment before. You know, some states have enacted, and New York is one. We enacted one is lifestyle discrimination laws. I mean, this is an interesting public policy issue. Is if people are engaging in off-duty conduct, okay, purely off-duty conduct that's not illegal, should they be protected for that? I mean, that's interesting. So do you believe in this at-will doctrine?
Are differentiating your situation as a lecturer at UCLA from the example that I gave as an employee of mine at the Rowan Gervie and Wynn Wall Law Firm.
Well, yes, I'm working for a public institution. So as the previous guest was articulating, she was absolutely right. She was explaining. It's called the Pickering balance, where there was two elements. Are you engaging in speech of a public concern? And then there's a balancing test. And she grafted on a third element from a case called Garcetti, which talks about if you speak in your official duties, then you don't get protection. But that doesn't apply to teachers. So, yes, Alan, if I work for you, I would not bash Alan Gervie's personnel policies,
right,
even if I disagreed with them. I would move on to another law firm.
Interestingly enough, we have to take a break. But one of the things that I found very interesting in your response was when you talked about some of the comments that were made that may have been denigrating races or whatever, you were talking about in the context of teaching free speech and in the context of cases. You weren't espousing necessarily your own personal views. That was part of the lecture on free speech. Isn't that right?
Well, I would never denigrate any race.
And that's what I'm saying.
But if you're teaching...
Well, they accuse you of saying things.
They don't accuse me. They tried to have some student write some opaque letter where they say that I use racial epithets during my lectures. Of course I do. If I'm teaching the law on harassment, racial harassment, you have if you use the N-word in the workplace, is that better or worse for a case? Of course it's better. Then the question is that sufficient for a hostile environment? Maybe, maybe not. The general rule had been it's not because it has to be severe or pervasive. One use of the N-word wouldn't be sufficient. But then you talk about the history of using that word, and maybe perhaps that word is so odious, so painful in our history that that's sufficient. So, of course, if I'm talking about discrimination against Hispanics, I got
to
talk about
– take a break. One of your students said, I love this professor. He's an epitome of a role model, amazing educator, and I'm so lucky to have been his student for his high knowledge, guidance, and wisdom. We're talking to Keith Fink. We have one more segment with Keith. You don't want to miss it. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
You check things all the time. Like your email every 10 seconds, or your ex's Instagram. But what about checking something as important as your credit? Well, Discover makes it quick, easy, and best of all, free. Discover is now offering FICO credit scores to everyone for free, even if you're not a customer. And checking your score won't hurt your credit. We call it the Discover Credit Scorecard. And once you know your score, you should check to see if your current credit card is the best fit for you. Check your credit. Compare your card. Go to discover.com/creditscorecard. Limitations apply.
You're unique, so why is your mattress one size fits all? Because a custom mattress costs thousands, until now. Hi, I'm Christian von Rickenbach, founder of HelixSleep.com, where you can buy a mattress online, customized for you, for hundreds of dollars instead of thousands. Go to HelixSleep.com, answer a few simple questions, and we build you the most comfortable mattress you'll ever sleep on. Shipping is free, and you have 100 nights to try it out. Go to HelixSleep.com/talkradio and get $50 off your order. HelixSleep.com/talkradio.
Are you concerned about your prostate? Do you pee more often than you used to? Be honest, is there a drop in your romantic life? You need to call for a free bottle of Super Beta Prostate. With Super Beta Prostate, you'll have less urges to urinate, less waking at night, and an improvement in your romantic life guaranteed. Try it free. Pay only shipping and handling. Call 1-800-467-5090. 1-800-467-5090. 1-800-467-5090.
High efficiency, high performance, high tech. The next generation of appliances at the Home Depot is everything except high priced. Because right now you can save up to 25% on top brands like LG, KitchenAid, GE, and Samsung. These appliances are loaded with features that make them smarter, more efficient, and easier to use, and now easier to afford. Nobody beats our prices, guaranteed. So upgrade your appliances today and save up to 25%. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details, valid through August 23rd.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference. Imagine hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. Look at the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Library.
Intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I think I'm just going to listen to music for the rest of the hour.
Tom Petty's great.
Yeah.
I grew up with him.
Jose.
You know that, right? I told you.
Yeah,
that story.
I think you had sex with him.
Right, exactly. Him and his wife and his kids and everybody. You're disgusting. My God. I was a child when I was in his house. With the traveling Wolverines.
KBC will be terminating me for my views.
Awful. I'll be terminating you. Out of here.
I thought that was a compliment.
That was awful.
It's a compliment.
When I was in his house, it was like from 11 to about 14 when we all hung out.
Okay. Well, it's a little early. She's very handsome. I'm Alan Gervie. We're talking to Keith Fink, who has filed a grievance with his union for his dismissal at UCLA. One of his students said, I had no interest in becoming a lawyer prior to this class, but Professor Fink brings out the excitement in being a lawyer. I didn't know it was exciting. And the law in general. Everything I have learned in this class is very applicable to life, even without going to law as a professor. Profession.
There we go.
Professor Fink makes interesting connections of the course material with current events, which makes the materials more tangible. But what Professor Fink decided to do was go on the Tucker Carlson show on Fox. And apparently UCLA didn't like that, did they, Keith?
They hated it. of all the shows to go on, Tucker Carlson, which has the most views, that pissed them off the most. No doubt about that.
Why did you do it?
Why wouldn't I do it? I mean, they think they're gonna push me out and sweep me under the rug. I mean, they made every mistake in the book. I was the wrong person to treat unjustly. And I'm not fighting for myself. I am fighting for the students and for principals. And I need to teach the students slight indignities, petty grievances, you let go. But there are certain principles, free speech, academic freedom, discrimination, that you must fight for. And you must put your life on the line. I'm not saying you put your lifeline for academic freedom, but for racism. So I need to be an example for the students. So they chose the wrong teacher. One teacher, I am the wrong teacher to fight. I have student support. I know the law. And I have pretty good access to the media, and I can handle myself in front of the media.
You have another job with some important
Well, that's, I have but, to ask this because I've been waiting. 30 different students coming out saying, this guy's amazing. He's a great teacher. He's influenced me in ways that I never thought, like, I want to be a lawyer, whatever it may be. Has all these students rising up saying, hey, this is not okay. Does that have any effect on the administration?
They could care less. I believe generally the administration has contempt for the students. The only thing that they care about other than hugging each other in their safe spaces and bashing Trump and bashing Donald Trump is donor money. Yeah. That's it. If Mr. Pritzker decided that he's upset, he's heard about the Fink situation and the lack of diversity and the refusal to engage in due process at UCLA. If he said, I have concerns about making my contribution, they would have me back tomorrow.
Does Thomas Henkel Miller's letter mean anything when he says that I believe that Keith Fink is an excellent instructor and is fully deserving of a continuing lecture appointment? The evidence of his teaching excellence is all that should go into this review.
Well, I think Miller's letter is important, but you can forget about Miller's letter. If I wrote a 7-page letter to Dean Gomez, which follows their criteria, it's very simple. On their own criteria and their own metrics, the highest rated teacher in the department is me. The most popular teacher in the department is me.
And the department is you.
Well, and that is why Dean Gomez couldn't put a single reason in her 5-sentence letter, thank you for playing for 10 years, yeah. Keith, but no
here,
thank you and have
parting,
a good life.
Here are your parting gifts.
And she thought there'd be no pushback.
Keith, what's going to happen now? You filed a grievance. You haven't filed a lawsuit. What do you do next? Because you make these points. You want people to know about this. What happens now?
I do. I want people to know about this because I was born in Los Angeles. I was born in Santa Monica. I was born in Los Angeles. This community means a lot to me. UCLA means a tremendous amount to me. And as you read those reviews or comments from my students, money doesn't matter to me. Money is not the most important thing, which is when you actually saw, Brian, what I'm talking about, the beauty of art when I traveled to Mexico City to see Diego Rivera. You can't put a price tag on a Robert Frost poem. Being able to be a positive influence in these kids' lives, sometimes I play Tom Petty songs or Phil Oakes or Bob Dylan. Being able to expose to these wonderful students, new ideas, whether it's philosophers, artists, and to help them in their thought process to be a positive influence and mentor in their lives, that means more to me than anything that I do. And sure, as a lawyer, I'm able to help usually one person on a case.
Isn't it true that it's how you teach, not what you teach, because we have so many teachers, professors who put kids to sleep, who turn them off, and here you are trying to excite them, try to get them interested in these topics, and you're not there. Couldn't you pull back a little bit? Couldn't you have used your magnetism, your debating skills, and not gone overboard in certain situations?
Of course I could have, but that's not me. That's not me, and I'm not going to. I would never sell myself out. But yes, of course, I'm not stupid, Alan. I could have avoided. I could have avoided all those issues. Yes, I could have been a rather more plain vanilla. Yeah, never use UCLA as a high. Look, when I'm teaching, the seminal case on this is out of George Mason. They had an ugly fraternity, had an ugly woman contest, and I think most people would think that that type of activity was sophomoric. But the court found that even offensive type of speech, racist speech, that is protected. Now, most college students don't understand that that type of activity is protected. What better example to use than UCLA's own trampling of students' rights when they had the Kanye Western party and the students dressed up? There's an immediate rush to judgment. They didn't have blackface actually here. They had gold paint. But UCLA didn't accord them due process. And even if it was black paint, using that case, UCLA would have violated their First Amendment rights for punishing the students for engaging in that type of speech. So, yes, I could have avoided that example, but the students are more engaged.
Mm-hmm. What about organizations, anti-Israel, anti-Jewish organizations? Do they have a right at UCLA?
I think the UC campuses, I played the documentary Hate Spaces. I think the UC campuses in general are some of the most anti-Semitic campuses in the nation. And UCLA rates right up there. And I'm extremely critical. You saw me at Tucker Carlson once. I compared the complete hypocrisy and double standards UCLA employs when they'll basically support the MSA and SJP and criticize Horowitz and his posters, and they'll say absolutely nothing when the Daily Bruin runs one of the most anti-Semitic cartoons. Now,
do they have a right to do it?
Absolutely they do. And I tell my students, absolutely they do. And in fact, this is how I am completely objective. I don't change my own point of view depending upon, because I am Jewish, depending upon, you know, where I was born. They have and the Daily Bruin was wrong in capitulating to pressure and apologizing for running that cartoon.
Will the ACLU support you?
Probably not.
Why? They supported those people in Charlottesville.
You know, this is where, you know, I guess Trump is right on some things. It's fake news. It's interesting that either my story is a story or it's not a story. It seems for 7 months to have gotten national attention. Why doesn't the LA Times do a story on it? Why doesn't CNN have me on their show? It's only the conservative media that has reached out, really, to grab a hold of my story. And it's, the story isn't political, left or right.
And by the way, we don't believe one way or the other. We talked about having Gloria Allred, Erwin Chemerinsky. We're having you. We have Eugene Volokh. We're the only place in this country which is not right, not left. We're just letting views come out. Your view and other views, Lisa Bloom's view, Laura Wasser's view, whoever it is. We are the only objective place where we honor your speech. What's going to happen? You have 2 minutes. Tell us, where are we going? Is this going to be groundbreaking? Is this another Garcetti?
No, I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking. I mean, my situation is a microcosm of the macrocosm. This is happening all over the country. Most people wouldn't fight like I fought for a number of reasons, not the least of which is, do you think USC is going to be knocking at a teacher's door when they say, hey, you're that teacher that lit UCLA on fire after they let you go? Oh, we want to hire you. You're the guy that's going to sue us. So no, this is not going to be another groundbreaking case. No, but, you know, we have only 1 minute. We only have 1 minute left,
yeah.
And I only wanted to mention, because I think this point, if I'm not going to be on the campus, this point is so important. One of the reasons they really want to push me off is they do not do right by students accused of sexual assault. And of course, there's serious crimes, sexual assault, sexual harassment, and this is under Title IX. And every single student that goes to UCLA, they better tremble, given the fact that if you're accused – you basically have no due process rights. Mm. You have, and without me there, you no longer can come to Keith Fink as your faculty support person.
And you but you can go to Keith A. Fink Associates in L.A.
No, they can't go to a lawyer.
No, you cannot.
They can't go to a lawyer.
You are correctly right. The process—that's right. The process does not give you the right to a lawyer.
I mean, it sounds like you're in bed with Lisa Bloom on this issue. Mm.
You're trying to goat me here. I'm in bed with Lisa on what issue? I mean, on a lot of issues,
on
sexual
harassment.
Oh, well, yes, I am. I represent both. I do both sides in sexual harassment. Actually, you know your friend from Canada. I sued him for 10 years, Dove Charney.
Yeah.
And then when Dove was let go, I'm now Dove's lawyer for 3 years. So, yeah, I mean, I represent both.
You still are helping people. Whatever happens with this, teach at another school, Southwestern, your alma mater. Go for it.
I can, but my connection is to UCLA.
Okay.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you so much for being on Gurvey's Law today.
Thank you both for having me. Anytime.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. We're going out with Tom Petty. And we'll see you next week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gurvey, and Wynn.